I'm Sandy Adams. I've been speaking about Agenda 21, 2030 for about 10 years now. I used to work in the corporate world and I left it in 2009. And I just started researching because I realised what was going on, having worked with some of these big companies. And I began to really delve into Agenda 21 very deeply. And had sort of personal experience of it when the Somerset Levels flooded, and it really deepened my knowledge. And I began to really just look into it and read the Global Diversity Assessment, read the 42 chapter document that is Agenda 21, and realised that actually this is actually trying to remove man from nature, put humanity into smart cities, and rewild the rural countryside of every country in the world, and realize that this has actually been put into policy by the globalists. This has all been put into policy over a number of years. So it's it, and what we're seeing now is man being removed from nature, from
Can you
certain.
just tell us about what happened with the levels? I mean, I went down and did some reporting. I think it was 2014 this happened from memory.
Yeah, it was 2014.
It was a big flood, but I documented the fact, this is the fact, that the Environment Agency was not opening the sluices to drain. I mean, we've got these great reens which run right across the levels, great long ones. There's the Huntsville is just one of them, and they were using the these automatic sluice gates which had been put there in the Second World War. I think they were actually restored around about the time of the Second World War, and they used to be operated manually, and then they put automatic gate openers on these sluices. The idea is to, at low tide, or actually for around about 6 hours around low tide, that those sluices allow the levels to drain directly out into the Bristol Channel. And actually, it's a very, very quick way of getting the water levels down. Now, I noticed, filmed with the evidence that these sluices were actually being kept, keeping the water back, so that there was no proper drainage going on. Not only was there problems with the complete failure to dredge for about a decade, so that the main rivers like the Parret weren't actually draining the water out. So the Environment Agency really were responsible for the utter mismanagement that led to the levels being flooded. And yet, as a news story, it went around the country, and particularly around our southwest region, as it had been caused by climate change.
Yeah, I mean this is the whole, lie really about it, because they said, oh, it was, rainfall because of climate change. Actually, it was a particularly wet spring, but no worse than other springs that we've had in the past. But it was the degradation of the infrastructure to stop the flooding that was the cause of it, and it was literally neglect of all those infrastructures. And it was, it was not only the reens hadn't been dredged, and the sluice gates were just not repaired or used properly. There was the pumping station wasn't working properly. There was a big ordnance factory that was on the levels that actually used a lot of the water. It was a steam factory that had been decommissioned, and nothing had been done for the provision of what would happen, with the water that was used there. And they'd chopped all the trees down along the River Parret that sucked up a lot of the water. So it was a perfect storm, and it was deliberate. And it only when I was down there, I met Christopher Booker, the amazing journalist, who he was a freelance journalist, I think, for the Telegraph and Times, and he used to write for everyone. But I spoke to him down there. And he said, you do realise this is Agenda 21. And I said, I've been reading about all this, kind of, I'd been on it for about, I don't know, a few years before that. But he really opened my eyes, because he was a great one who debunked the whole climate change thing with he did this fantastic groupthink paper, which you can get online. It's called Climate Change Groupthink, and it's all he's followed the whole climate change thing and realized that it was a lie and revealed it to be a lie. And he was amazing in giving me so much information about how this is deliberate.
Well, I mean, I just like to stress, I think, you know, certain people, particularly people in parts of the, you know, equatorial regions, will say that climate change is not a lie, that there is climate change happening. I would suggest, though, that the way it's being spun to the public is a gross exaggeration of the as a problem. I mean, for example, we've now got a charge being introduced right across Greater London, which is an emission control charge, which is means it's going to cost everybody around about £30 a day to actually drive anywhere, even into the suburbs of London, inside the South Circular and North Circular Road area. And this is something I can remember years ago. This is in the back in the late 80s, talking to the Department of Transport, saying, well, we want to introduce road pricing, but we haven't yet managed to come up with a way to convince the public to take that pill, you know. And they obviously wanted to do this for a long, long time. They had all the technology ready to go even then, but they realized that politically it was impossible. Now, with climate change and Sadiq Khan, they're saying, well, you know, the pollution levels in London are so terrible, and I'm not saying there isn't pollution in London, there is. This is being used as an excuse to basically bring out a completely new tax out of nowhere. Now, we also know that the, for example, with a big city like London, in the 80s, Ken Livingstone started a system which would have actually, well, it did subsidise public transport. It meant that people were leaving their cars at home in their tens of thousands, and that people were using public transport because it was much cheaper, and they had the biggest increase in the use of public transport ever under Ken Livingstone when he was at the GLC. And so there is this sort of, you know, it's an attempt really to, by the way, about 10,000 less serious accidents on the roads, and yet that was all overturned. He wasn't allowed to do that. So there's a whole nother agenda to this, it seems to me, to this Agenda 21 and climate change, which is being able to introduce all sorts of basic taxes just for simple travel, you know. Anyway, so can you just take us through Agenda 21, how we got to the Rio Earth Summit, and then what Agenda 2030 is in a nutshell, if you possibly can.
Sure, yeah. Well, Agenda 21 was birthed at the Rio Summit, as you know, and it was basically, they got 179 countries to sign up to Agenda 21, which was to save the planet. They frightened literally everyone into believing that the planet was warming, which it isn't. So they got everyone to, all the heads of all the countries, 179 countries, just about every country in the world really, to sign up to the policies and adhere to the policies of Agenda 21. And it was done very, very cleverly. And really, the people in charge of it were billionaires, you know, basically. There was Maurice Strong, Al Gore, David Rockefeller, the Rothschilds were there, Edmund de Rothschild was there, lots of sort of corporate city bankers. It was all to do with the World Bank, the Conservation Bank as well, which we now realise is really behind all this.
Hang on, because I know just before the actual Rio Earth Summit, there was a private meeting aboard the Royal Yacht Britannia, which was over there, with Prince Charles sitting on board.
That's right. And you know, it's horrible when you hear, you know, people's reports of what happened after they'd got everybody to sign up. They were all in their yachts in Rio de Janeiro, just literally drinking champagne, saying, we cracked it. We got them to do it. You know, we've got them all to sign up to it. And really, this agenda, there's nothing green about it. Agenda 21 is not green. It's a technocratic agenda, and there's nothing green, nothing natural about it. And this is what we're seeing, you know, now. But unfortunately, it's being sold as the green, like the Green New Deal. They've rebranded everything. And really, the Green New Deal will do, you know, you were talking about the emissions. The Green New Deal will literally tax every householder to the hilt for every human action, for every, you know, every there's a whole thing which is, you know, the net zero document, which literally people will have to retrofit their houses at their own expense. They're trying to get rid of wood burners. They're trying to get rid of, well, they've said wood burners should be outlawed by 2030, which will give people no means of heating their houses if they don't have coal, or if they can't afford coal, or whatever, but they can't, or even gas. But they're also ripping out every gas boiler And every gas cooker and every gas, you know, any gas appliances.
Well, that's funny because you should say that because we have just had a nice new gas boiler installed for the central heating and the hot water.
Well, that according to the net zero document, they aim to have every gas boiler ripped out of every home in the UK by 2030. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you. And it's like it's a bit like the I've got a diesel car because everyone said, oh, it's better than, you know, and now they ban diesel cars. And actually, I got a fine the other day for driving. I didn't realise I was in some sort of emission zone in London and I got fined for it. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. You know, most people have got cars that they, you know, and they're now saying, well, we're going to get rid of all cars except, you know, even hybrids from central London. So those people that try to, you know, meet them halfway and get a hybrid, they're changing it every 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah, actually, one of Tony Blair's government advisors who said to everybody that actually that the diesel cars were much better for emissions because there were ingredients in the petrol, which is really bad for your health. So encourage everybody to get diesels. And then they say, oh, dear, no diesels. And no, I mean, personally, as a driver, I much prefer driving diesels, but partly because of you get a very good torque. They don't stall very easily.
Yeah.
And also, it's a far less complicated engine, there's less to go wrong, so yeah. You know, why not have a diesel in my view? Apparently it's I'm a terrible person killing the planet. And the other mad thing about this is that if you are a multimillionaire and you buy yourself a brand new Range Rover every year, you don't pay a penny of this tax.
Isn't it mad? Well, why is that then? Because Why is it that?
Well, he's saying that they're up to the latest emission standards, these latest ones, and so there is no that you don't have to pay any emission charge on them.
Well, do you know, my diesel car's only 5 years old and it's got an eco sticker on the back, so I really would challenge the fact that it's not. You know, that it's not up to standard. I just don't understand it.
Well, me too. I mean, I've got a reasonably modern car, which has got a whole Volkswagen, which has got a whole emissions control thing. But anyway, look, the reason I wanted to get you on, Sandy, is to talk about this whole thing of rewilding. Because I've noticed that, you know, around the country, there are various areas, including actually apparently here in Somerset, that the authorities, this is not just the campaigners, the Rewilding Britain group, which is very well funded and run by Rebecca Wrigley, who is the partner of the Guardian columnist George Mobbio. What they're trying to do is to, and they seem to be being very successful in getting the government to actually alter its policy to say that there are whole areas of Britain, large areas, particularly around the coastline, sometimes on the hills as well, where humans will be prohibited. So what is this whole rewilding, and has it got anything to do with this Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030?
Absolutely, yes, it has. It's got everything to do with Agenda 21, 2030. I mean, it's rewilding has been a big mantra for the globalists for a long time, because their end game, and I know this sounds, you know, a bit like a conspiracy theory, but it's not, because it's in the global diversity assessment that was created after the Earth Summit in 1992. And that was the global diversity assessment was the blueprint of how they would roll out Agenda 21. You know, Agenda 21 was the plan and the blueprint was the global diversity assessment. And what happened is that the whole rewilding thing is to rewild. Their idea is that man has destroyed the planet, and that the rural areas would be perfectly all right if they were rewilded and they let the biodiversity just literally do its own thing, you know, so that everything would overgrow and everything would be fine. And you keep the humans out of those corridors, they call them in the global biodiversity assessment. They call them corridors. And the people are exiled to the smart cities where they can thrive, because, you know, they'll have everything on their doorstep. They'll have a pizza place underneath their flat, their little, you know, sort of smart city flat. You know, they'll be surveilled, they'll, you know, they'll be on their tablets and everything will be fine. But the humans really shouldn't interfere with the land. And that's basically what Agenda 21 wants to do, because the land is the resources for the people who are managing it. And that is, you know, and everything should be state controlled and not in the hands of private ownership. So the idea is to actually get rid of private landowners and get rid of private ownership of anything. You know, as Klaus Schwab says, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. So
So how is this Great Reset linked up to Agenda 2030 then?
It is Agenda 2030. I mean, Agenda 21 was launched at the Earth Summit. I'll tell you about Agenda 2030. It's simply a goal. Agenda 2030 happened in 2015 when Obama came to Rome and the Pope endorsed Agenda 2030, which is really a goal to achieve the 17 goals of Agenda 21 by 2030. And what they'd done is they'd rehashed the goals. The goals were 8 goals prior to that. And they'd turned them into 17 goals to be achieved by 2030. And those goals, well, everyone, you know, you can look them up, the 17 goals of Agenda 21. But they're very nefarious and they're written in that sort of Milton Erickson fluffy speak that they always do speak. But actually, there's a very sinister side to them, because when they talk about, you know, food security, they mean Monsanto. When they talk about health, general, you know, health for all, they mean vaccines. So it's a very, very. The 17 goals are not what, you know, what they say they are. It's all about control of everything. It's control of health, education, food supply, just about everything. That's what the 17 goals of Agenda 21 are. So 2030 was simply a goal. And then what did you want to know after 2030? It was how it's progressed since then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in how this links up with this Great Reset that we keep hearing about.
Well, yes, basically the Great Reset is that what they did was they kind of merged the whole sort of health thing, and the World Economic Forum is really in charge of the Great Reset with Klaus Schwab. I mean, he's written the book COVID-19, The Great Reset, The Fourth Industrial Revolution. And I'd urge anybody to read those two books by Klaus Schwab, because Schwab is in with the whole Agenda 21 program. And actually what happened in 2019 was the United Nations they birthed Agenda 21, and the World Economic Forum was sort of always in the background at that point, but they kind of work together. They're all in Davos, they're all in the Bilderberg group, they all talk to one another. But the World Economic Forum has suddenly come to the front, because they are really interested in the whole AI stuff. Which is all part of Agenda 21, but it wasn't sold as that at the Earth Summit.
Well, was it? This AI is really part of this whole transhumanist agenda. And the other thing is that the World Economic Forum has basically conducted in 2019 a hostile takeover bid for none other than the United Nations. The UN was strapped for cash, and the World Economic Forum, Schwab and his chums, came along and said, "Well, it's actually, we have a whole load of banks which are our members who they can make up as much cash as you want. So why don't we go into partnership with each other?" Well, as we know, it's the partner who has the most cash rich that tends to call the tune, he who pays the piper. So the UN is being slowly subsumed at the moment by this private organization.
Well, I'm not so sure. I think the United Nations, what they did was I don't know whether it's a takeover by the WEF, I have no idea. But what happened in 2019 was they had the Antonio Guterres, he's the Secretary General of the United Nations, met up with Klaus Schwab in Geneva because he wanted to accelerate the 17 goals of Agenda 21. And he met up with the World Economic Forum, and they called it the Strategic Framework Partnership. And so they made some sort of agreement there, and I'm not sure what it was, but it was some sort of agreement. And what they published wasn't really what they'd I think what they'd come to some sort of agreement on, because it was, again, it was all very fluffy about what that agreement was. And weirdly, you wait only another 4 or 5 weeks, and the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, and Bill Gates meet up at Johns Hopkins University or facility in New York, and they have their event 201, where they bring in the pandemic. And so you realise that the pandemic was actually created to accelerate the 17 goals of Agenda 21. And that's what the World Economic Forum is saying now. We've got a perfect opportunity. This pandemic has provided the perfect opportunity to bring in this technology that will actually help society. And that's what the Fourth Industrial Revolution is all about.
Well, I call it more like a Fourth Reich, actually.
Well, of course it is, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely appalling. I mean, going from, oh, let's make the planet all lovely and green, and let's do this and let's do that, and let's rewild this and let's rewild that. It's suddenly, it's revealed itself to be what it has always been, which is actually a global governance agenda to take over every resource on the planet.
Well, and I mean, it's interesting. I think this focus on wild animals is quite interesting, because the Nazis had a whole program about that, which was, I mean, there are various places you can find out about it. But in the US, there was a whole documentary which was made about it earlier this year in March 2021, called Hitler's Jurassic Monsters. and it talks about the Third Reich's founding plan, it says, to recreate the primeval forests of Germanic folklore, complete with breeds of long extinct beasts. Now, I was reading last year in the Bristol Post about reintroducing wolves to the areas around Bristol, and I'm thinking to myself, well, is this really such a good idea to have packs of wolves hunting around? Maybe they will start getting a taste for young children that are playing, you know, on their way to school or whatever.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is it. I mean, they're actually trying to reintroduce lynx and wolves and bears into Europe. And you think, well, you know, even if you wanted to go for a picnic on a Sunday, would you really take your young children somewhere where there's bears and wolves? No, you wouldn't. And it's all part of it. It's all part of it. It's really awful. And you wonder if it's got some sort of weird hunting ground that they're trying to create for the elite, you know?
Well, also, I mean, of course, this is denying the land to people. It's a form of enclosure. It's basically privatizing, you know, excluding people from the countryside and this sort of thing. The Nazi project, though, it started as a private project, just so if people are interested in looking it up, between two Nazi zoologists, Lutz and Heinz Heck. And it was embraced by the Nazi party after the two got to know Hitler's second-in-command, Hermann Göring, and he made sure that it all began to happen. The two creatures they focused on were the Auroch, which is a supersized, wild and very violent breed of cattle, something called the Tarpan, which is a wild and aggressive ancestor of the modern horse. So, you know, this idea of making sure that these areas are just set aside for nature is not nothing really new.
That's really interesting. I will look that up. I'm fascinated by that because, you know, this whole agenda has a very dark history. I mean, when I was looking at, I think it's the International, what's it called? The International Union of the Conservation of Nature, which was set up in 1948 by Julian Huxley. I mean, as we know, Julian Huxley was was all part of the global elite at that point, and making all sorts of decisions, you know what they were going to do with all of us, you know, and Brave New World, as old as Huxley, his brother, knew, was not a book of fiction. It was a book of truth about what's going to happen.
Well, that's right. It's a bit like a Orwell-like warning, wasn't it, to the people in the future, absolutely, saying, watch out, everybody, they're up to no good, this lot. Yeah. Rewilding is going on in lots of places. I've come across it in North Norfolk over the bank holiday weekend when we were down there in our yurt. And a lot of the locals are saying, well, they're trying to exclude anybody from walking out on the salt marshes. Actually, it's a beautiful area, around about 3,500 acres of common land out there, some of which the National Trust say they own, others bits of which the National Trust are trying to claim which they don't own, being very naughty, grabbing land, basically, for their own private ownership to their own estate. I thought the National Trust was supposed to take donations of land, not steal it from local parishes. But anyway, there's an attempt by Natural England there to exclude people from the salt marshes, saying, oh, it's better for the wildlife. I mean, the thing is, you hardly would see a soul out there, maybe one person a week or something walking out there. It's a very wild area. But they're saying even that is too many. They want to completely exclude people. We've also had the whole debacle in Mid Wales, where the rewilders were trying to reintroduce wild animals and exclude people and exclude farm animals from areas, even up on the mountains, saying you're not going to be able to graze the mountains anymore. And that was completely rebuffed by the Welsh farmers, actually told the rewilding Britain people where to go, and in fact they got completely excluded there. And then we've now most recently got the situation on Okehampton Common in Dartmoor, where last year Natural England are starting to try and tell the common rights holders and farmers on Dartmoor that they won't be allowed to graze their animals there anymore. Now, they've been grazing animals there, well, obviously not them, but their predecessors, for thousands of years, and now apparently that's not allowed.
Mm. I mean, it is ludicrous, really, because, you could call something softer renaturing. I believe that biodiversity, you can encourage it, you can make it happen. But what they're doing is they're denying that humankind has a part to play in the ordering of nature. And, you know, as stewards and not as pillagers, I mean, humanity is, you know, they seem to have, the whole rewilding thing doesn't understand stewardship and the managing of this land, and that actually the grazing is all part of the wonderful cycle of if you like renaturing everything.
The thing is commons have been around for thousands of years. I mean, the open field system was managed in common. These commons have, I mean, even I'm talking to you now from Stroud, we've got Minchin Hampton Common here, where every 2 months the common court meets. And anyone that's had too many animals on the common gets a slap wrist and is told that they've got to pay. These commons are managed. There's this sort of idea that the commons are not being managed by anybody, and it's all just a free-for-all. So some private owner is probably better come and grab it, or Rewilding Britain will take it over and reintroduce wolves there or something. But anyway, if you can just explain what's going on in Dartmoor.
Well, Dartmoor, I mean, they do have the Dartmoor Commoners Council, but unfortunately there seems to have been some policy brought in by the Conservation of Nature and the Wildlife Trust. I think it's the Dartmoor Wildlife Trust. It's all these ones that have been almost Natural England, all those, the WWF, they've all kind of banded together under this rewilding thing, and that we've got to get rid of humans because they're bad type thing. And unfortunately they've come up with this scheme that they're trying to ban, and they're going to have a fight on their hands. They're trying to ban farmers from grazing their cattle their sheep on Dartmoor, which again they've been doing, you know, for thousands of years in their families. There's no rhyme or reason to it, because what they want to do is literally let it go to gorse, which it will do, because that's the predominant plant that grows on the moors. And then they're saying that, you know, it'll be dangerous for or almost impossible for dog walkers to go on there because it'll be so overgrown. And this is what they're doing. It's you know, sort of just taking the rights of passage for people to walk their dogs, graze their sheep, and use it as common land. So in fact, it's a land grab. by the government or the governance, if you like, to, and it's all written in Agenda 21 that this is what they want. They want these corridors where you do, people just don't, aren't allowed to go. People have no rights over common land anymore. And this did happen a number of years ago in 2014 in America. And Rosa Corre, you know, she was fighting it in Texas. She was the lady who really pioneered Agenda 20, anti-Agenda 21 in the United States. And it ended up with Texas actually fighting Agenda 21 and outlawing it in the state of Texas. And you'll find now that Texas has got no COVID laws at the moment either. They've really come out against it. And it was all down to grazing on common land that was being taken away from them by the government. And it ended up with this sort of weird standoff with the farmers and on a ranch in Texas, the Bundy Ranch, and the feds. And you've got this amazing picture of the feds all turning up with their cars, you know, their sort of police cars. And literally, it was like the Wild West. The farmers were defending their land with on horses with guns. And they pushed back the federal agencies and said, no, this is our land. We've had it for so many years, a bit like the Welsh farmers did, and said, no, you can go to hell. No, this is our land. And they fought it and they won. And this is it. You see, it's all being done by consent. You know, if you've got enough little agencies like Natural England and the Wildlife Trust and all these people say, oh, we've got to rewild it because it's green and it's wonderful and this, that and the other. And those are the useful idiots who are actually working for the global governance, you know, the elite who are trying to push this forward.
I mean, isn't it fascinating what's been going on in Dartmoor? Unbelievable that Natural England will write to the farmers and say, well, you're only allowed to use this land for 6 months of the year. Of course, that really is signing a death warrant for scores of farmers that will no longer be viable. But the fascinating thing about this is that there is the land rights group. It's called the Land Justice Network, who've been around for the last few years. And they have been, one of their main gurus is George Monbiot. Oh. And one of the things that they've been doing is they've been campaigning against more landowners and grouse shooting, which I thought was something rather bizarre about that. You know, the idea that you're going to set up a protest camp on the top of a grouse moor somewhere where no one can really see you and you're not going to really make hardly any difference. And that yet they have the protest camp up there. It's obviously quite a nice place to be if the weather's good. But and it turns out that the people who are being actually hit by the rewilding campaigners at Natural England are, of course, the owners of moorland. In fact, something called, I think it's called the Moorland Association, are the people who are fighting back for on behalf of the sheep farmers on Dartmoor. So I'm just quoting from one of their articles, the Moorland Association. It says, when the Natural England team leader for South Devon and Dartmoor, Eamon Crowe, C-R-O-W-E, was contacted for comment, he denied his organisation had in place any schemes that would remove sheep from Dartmoor. It was pointed out to him that a member of his staff had contacted the secretary of Oakhampton Commoners Association with a letter that was to be distributed to farmers in the area, clearly stating that there needs to be a very significant reduction in numbers over this period, with sheep numbers being brought down as close to zero as possible. And to this, Mr. Crowe responded that the correspondence was supposed to be private. The Moorlander attempted to get further comment from Mr. Crowe, but we were simply referred back to the press statement as printed above, they say. So this is obviously being done in a very, very cloak and dagger fashion. The idea here really is that they want to deny all knowledge of it, Natural England, even though what they're doing is they are decimating farms and possibly putting, you know, remember, these farmers are people that provide food for our tables.
Exactly. Well, you see, in doing this, in a way, it's feeding into that agenda of getting rid of meat production. And you see, that's again another you know, prong to this whole thing is trying to get everybody to buy into veganism. And in a way, if you can make it as difficult as possible for people, for farmers to graze sheep and cattle and all that, you know, all the stuff that, you know, traditionally they've done, then, you know, you're halfway to getting your globalist agenda sorted and getting everybody eating what you want them to eat and, you know, sort of controlling the food chain. And unfortunately, this is an agenda. There is an agenda to outlaw any meat production.
Amazing, isn't it? Geoffrey Cox, the MP for Torridge and West Devon, said, "I am most concerned to learn of Natural England's decision to exclude sheep from the moor. I'm urgently seeking an explanation from the agency, and I will raise the issue with the Secretary of State." So I suppose, you know, in a way, it's the way they've been going about this, Sandy, that kind of gives them away as the bad guys, doesn't it, in this? Because they haven't actually got the courage of their own convictions at Natural England.
No. And the thing is that the more support that we can give the farmers, because actually, you know, a lot of people just can't figure out why would, you know, sort of Natural England and you know, the World Heritage or whoever it is, the World Wildlife Trust, all those agencies they've all been infiltrated over a long period of time into this sort of whole, if you like, fake green agenda. And they think they're being green and they're not. They're actually destroying the livelihood of the people that provide the food for this country. And they're just not getting it. These people don't understand the countryside. Who are these people that work in Natural England and the Wildlife Trust? Do they really know? Or have they gone to university and been mentored?
Well, I mean, I came across the very, very similar types of people at the Environment Agency back in 2014 with the Somerset Levels, that they are there. They're almost like robotic. They don't really seem to have any kind of real connection with the local area. The other thing, of course, about what's happening in Dartmoor, I mean, this is just one part of the country. This is happening all over the place, but it's local to us, and it's something which has been well exposed by the Moorland Association, is the fact that it was that the these policies were chugging through government and then rolled out just after the lockdowns. In fact, the 2020 lockdowns, the idea was that not only are the people going to be locked down, but the sheep will be too.
Yeah, I mean, then they can put their bears and wolves on there, you see. It's mad, isn't it? I mean, honestly.
And the killer cows, these great things with these great horns charge at everything they see.
It's frightening. I mean, what I do think it's funny because one of the Rothschilds, like it's one of the younger ones, and I can't remember what his name is. Maybe it's Zach Rothschild. I can't remember. But he ended up, he's got a big pile somewhere in Somerset, I think it's Somerset. And he's a great rewilder because he's been, you know, obviously mentored into it for a long time. And apparently he bought a whole load of wild boar for his land. And these wild boar went loose. And there was a terrible controversy about what was going on with these wild boar who were ending up sort of attacking people in the woods and things. And he had to he was taken to court over it. And find, and the boars had to go. But, you know, there's a whole load of people that simply don't understand the countryside. They don't understand stewardship. And the fact that, you know, man has always been living in symbiosis with nature from the year dot. And you can't remove man from nature or vice versa. So, you know, there is this... you know, there is this almost, it's almost a divine thing. I hate to get sort of woo-woo about it, but there is a divine link between man and nature and animals. And quite honestly, to actually disrupt that will cause an absolute, you know, nightmare. You know, it's people also, even if you think about, you know, woodland, if they're going to just not manage woodland, what will happen is there'll be a canopy that grows over the wood. And it will block the sun. I mean, coppicing and things like that. That's why we do that. Coppicing allows the wood to flourish. If you don't have woodsmen cutting and coppicing and doing all that kind of stuff, and you just let it will all die.
Mm. Yeah, it will. You're right. And I mean, that has been happening, obviously, for the last 200-300 years, slowly but surely. You know, people have been being excluded, not just through evictions of enclosure. It's almost as if this is the latest version of that enclosure, where they're saying to people, I mean, for example, on the levels who find it very difficult to get house insurance, it's time for you to leave, you know, because we're not going to manage the levels. We're not going to stop them flooding. And so we're going to drive you out with the threat of high insurance prices and that you may be flooded at any time. But look, with this Agenda 2030, you mentioned Klaus Schwab's book. Where is a good place, do you think, for listeners to have a look at all this Agenda 2030? Because I mean, I see the two main figures, I may be wrong, as Klaus Schwab and Prince Charles, who have been pushing all this through. And of course, Prince Charles was there at the beginning of Agenda 21. He's also a big part of the Great Reset. And we've just heard that this week that he's also been giving honours, the Order of the British Empire and the CBE, to one of these Saudi princes who's in the process of bombing the hell out of Yemen, you know, using British jets, British bombs, a completely heroic. It's not really a war. It's more of a slaughter of a country which is the poorest country in the Middle East. It's also got a whole load of UNESCO World Heritage sites down there. And there's something like 200,000 innocent people have died. And yet Prince Charles thinks that he's a good guy to give £1.5 million to the Prince's trust. And he's going to give him a gong. In fact, it was Norman Baker, I think, the former minister and Liberal Democrat MP, that pointed out this is actually a criminal offence, Charlie.
Well, this should be his demise. I mean, it won't be because it'll all be covered up. But the fact is that that man has no right to be, you know, being given, you know, to inherit the throne. I'm sorry, he is an absolute idiot. I mean, we know that. He's dim, he's a useful idiot, and he really doesn't know what the hell he's doing. I mean, he's an idiot. I mean, words can't explain how angry I was when I saw that, and how angry I am at how he's dabbling in this whole climate change nonsense. That, you know, they don't even call it global warming now. The climate has always changed. It's always been in flux. You know, nothing is settled. The science has never been settled. It's always up and down. And we're in a period of global cooling at the moment. And nobody is really. And we've got the COP conference coming up, and he's going to be involved in that. And he shouldn't be. You know, he's really sullied himself by all that Saudi stuff, you know, brown envelopes and what have you. It's just appalling.
You know? OK, so this COP summit, what do you reckon is going to happen there? Any ideas?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is actually really set the policies and set the agenda and get it set in stone so that they'll try and accelerate all the restrictions on gas and oil and coal and try and push the whole renewables things, which we know that there's not enough in the renewables to actually fulfill the national grid.
And well, I know we had, I don't know if you saw this, Sandy, but we had just for the first time this week, for a long time, they had to actually kick back in one of the old mothballed coal-fired power stations because there was so little wind around that we rely now on that wind in order to keep the country going. And the national grid was just about to run out of electricity, so they had to fire up an old coal-fired power station. The problem, of course, is that they're relying on nuclear into the future. And Hinkley C, for example, the nuclear power station near us, just near Bridgewater, that has run into all sorts of problems. They've had a couple of fires recently, and the prototype reactor, because this type of reactor is a brand new design, over in China, has had to be shut down because it's not working after only about 18 months of operation. So it doesn't look as if Hinkley C is going to be viable. We are looking at the possibility that maybe we might simply just run out of electricity.
Yeah, no, it's been known for a long time that a few of us went to a talk at the Department of Energy, the one that I say Department of Energy. Anyway, it was a kind of conference on renewables and how they're going to fulfill the grid and all that sort of thing. And we went there just to sort of like earwig and find out what they're up to. And we got talking to some people that owned a company called I think it was Red Frog or something, and they owned generators buried underneath the ground in England, and they were fulfilling any deficit in the national grid. And even at peak time in the winter, when everybody comes home from work and they switch their kettles on and they switch their ovens on and all the lights are going and the central heating, that the grid actually struggles, and they rely on these private companies who've got buried generators underneath the ground to fulfill the grid. So how the hell are we going to cope with renewables? Because renewables, if you look at a pie chart of the national grid, it's a tiny sliver of, you know, literally a sliver of that pie chart is renewables. And they know this. I mean, I honestly believe that there's another agenda to cause outages, shortages, cold and lack within all of us. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's the way I believe it, because any person with any ounce of intelligence could see that if they get rid of coal, gas, wood, everything that they're saying they're going to get rid of, they must know they can't fulfill us, you know. And it, to me, it makes sense that it is actually a nonsense. The whole thing is a nonsense, unless they're just, you know, planning to, you know, get rid of us all with this. What's going on?
Maybe they think the population's going to be reduced. Maybe that's their wishful thinking. Anyway, look, fascinating chatting as ever, Sandy. So can you just remind us of where people can find your website and follow your work online?
My website is sandyadams.net. I'm on Facebook as Sandy Adams. I do talks. I'm going up to Birmingham to Truth Juice to do a talk on Tuesday, and I'm going and doing talks everywhere. If anybody wants me to, then I will do one on the history of Agenda 21, how long it's been running. It is a very dark agenda. That's a history that everything that's going wrong at the moment in the world is down to the global governance agenda, which is what it is. Yeah.
And I find it fascinating. I mean, just one thing, chatting to you today, you know, I put two and two together, realising that the George Monbiot's campaign, the Land Justice Network, was actively campaigning against the people who are being told by Natural England that they've got to remove their sheep from the moors. So, you know, you've got these almost like AstroTurf, they call it, don't they? Kind of pretend green groups who are there to work for the globalists.
It's fake green, and it's confusing everyone. People think it's green and it's not. It's technocratic. It's actually removing rights from the people, and it's a technocratic agenda to bring in the fourth industrial revolution, which will actually have everybody enslaved. I mean, I can't you know, emphasize that enough. And actually, that land justice group caused so much damage to a farm when they decided to occupy it. And they destroyed, they decided to put human sewage or something on the land, or they did something awful. And it was rented, a rented farmer. They thought they were being really clever, and they were trying to screw up some landowner that they thought was, you know, he was a landowner. It wasn't, it was a rented farm. And they caused a massive amount of damage. And actually, he took them to court, and I think he won. I can't remember now, but I know that they're really, they do not understand the countryside, and they don't understand how things work. And they just, they left litter, they camped on it, they had parties, they were very badly behaved, horrible people.
Well, actually, I'm going to forgive them for having a party, because I quite like a party too. But I know also there was an altercation on this grouse moor camp, which I think was in 2018, with a woman called Helen Steele. She was one of the Mac Libel too. She turned up at the camp, and there was a massive row with her because she said she didn't want to have transgender men in the ladies' toilet that she was in, because there was, when she went into the ladies' toilet, there was a man, a transgender man. Yeah. And she, for saying that, was ejected from the camp. Of course, now it was actually quite late in the day, and it was right up on the top of the moors, so she's told, just go away, we don't want you coming back here again.
Gosh, well, you know, if that's the attitude, you know where that agenda's coming from, don't you? It says it speaks volumes.
Yeah, it does. Anyway, look, Sandy Adams, thanks very much for joining us again.
Okay, thank you very much.